race doesn't figure a whole lot. The new book is called Bone Shepherds. And we live in a bloody time. So I think a lot, you know, the explorations of kind of personal rage, particularly in the second book, but also in the first book, they become bigger, and I start asking questions about what does it mean to have a legacy of rage? What does it mean to have one of love? But there is one poem in here that does have to do with race. I moved to Austin in August for the year. And it was, I mean, I've lived no more than a half an hour outside of metropolitan New York pretty much my entire life. So living in a city that was so clearly segregated by race and by class was astonishing to me and terrifying, to be honest with you. I mean, I'd experienced things before, mostly when I was much younger, but to consistently walk down the street and have people cross to the other side or to have people kind of clutch their purses a little bit closer, to have one person actually find out that I wrote books and ask me, do you write in English? And I wanted to say, yeah, better than your whole fucking family. Can you edit that out too, man? It was really astonishing to me. Now, there's a great diner right up the street from me called The Galaxy. And recently I went in, and I've gotten to the habit of praying again before I eat. And consistently, I am the only non-white patron in the diner. And it took me a long time to get used to that in Austin. This particular time, I was carrying a couple of books of poems, and I was reading them. My food came, put the books of poems down. There was an older white couple directly next to me, and I could feel them kind of staring at me and trying to check out like the books that I was reading. And the gaze became even more intense when I bowed my head and I started to pray. And I said to myself, they must be wondering to whom I pray and what I'm praying for. So that's what this poem is about. Oh, and Emily was saying that you had just read a short story about in the voice of a dog. This is a poem. How many of you read this Edgar story? Okay. So this is a poem in the voice of another canine, in the voice of a wolf. Wolf prays at the galaxy. For years, I believed I could lower my eyes and exult in nothing. Sometimes I can sit at a table in the galaxy, this diner in Texas, and without curse or guile, dip sweet potato fries into honey and salt. And because salt is a metal whose taste I love, this is how I pray. And though I walk upright, and though I carry books, and though I order sweet potato fries in the language of the Milky Way, my head must become long and lupine when my mouth meets the pleasures of cold water on the first 80-degree day of January. This morning is like most mornings here. The patrons are all white. All. What they know of me comes from legends. I'm the only wolf in the galaxy, one, you might say, who regards the night from the night itself. It's times like this I become certain of my solitude, certain there's a kinder heart than the one responsible for the history of this scene. There is an old couple beside me. The man is a crane with a crane neck. His wife is a raccoon and raccoon necked. Their necks, I mean, are useless. Neither can seem to make out the open book of poems in front of me. Neither can imagine the wishes of a silent wild canine when he bows his canine head to close his canine eyes. Not them, not you, not one conceive of the dark, doggish god I name in prayer or what bloody dance must be twined up in my hamstrings. Not one can fathom the lusty teeth of such wishes. This mad dog prays over sweet potatoes and salt. My God, look how crooked at the knuckles my hands. Some of us still believe the taste of freedom is an old iron. They set traps in all the wrong places. I will tell you this, though I am a beast who wishes for serenity, even for the dumb crane and the blind raccoon, my brothers and I, we nightly finger the tarsal scars of our escape. We refuse to die any other way. We feed ourselves among you. We refuse to lick our ankles until the old manacles rust through.